Podcast Macabre, Episode 11, Double Flash Special. Hello and welcome to Cast Macabre, I'm Barry, your host. This week we're doing something different and running two Flash fiction pieces. The first is Faces in the Window by Talu Breyer. Talu lives in England, but her heart resides in New Hampshire, where her partner is. Writing in many different genres, she loves to test the boundaries and challenge normality. She can be found at her horror journal, stumblingintothevoid.blogspot.com. The narrator for this story is Mark Nash. You can find out more about his work at marknash.weebly.com. That's Mark with a C. Now, we've a tale to tell you.
Faces in the Window by Talu Breyer. Cynthia walked into the kitchen where her husband sat reading the morning paper. Noticing the pot of tea was a little light, she put the kettle on before finally sitting down at the table. "Darling?" she asked as she spread butter on a piece of toast. A rustle of the paper filled the air as Keith turned the page. "Yes?" She placed a dollop of marmalade on the toast, then replied, "Is there any reason why there is a mask by the bathroom window? It didn't half make me jump when I went in to use the shower." She glanced over to him as he moved the paper down a little, a puzzled look on his face. "Mask?" His right eyebrow raised a little in a manner Cynthia had always found endearing. "Yes, a male face. You know, it's odd. It looks vaguely familiar. I just can't think why it would be hanging up in the bathroom. Halloween is a long time away, and I know it's nothing I bought." "Oh, that," he nodded, the puzzled expression fading away. She looked at him expectantly, her knife still working on the marmalade. She didn't want to interrupt if he was going on to say anything else. Slowly he picked up his tea and took a long sip. Deciding he had actually finished speaking, she prompted him. "Well?" "Oh, well, it's no mask. It's the face of that workman who was rude to us when the windows were being reglazed." Cynthia thought back. And then she smiled as finally she fitted the face to the person. "I thought I recognised him. He was the one who had the clover earring and was obnoxiously loud, wasn't he?" Her husband nodded and rustled the newspaper, returning to his place in it. She slowly ate her piece of toast, enjoying the quiet morning. Her toast eaten, she spoke again. "Darling? Why is his face in the bathroom? Doesn't he need it?" She took a sip of freshly squeezed orange juice. "It needed to be kept damp. Don't want it to dry out too quickly, otherwise it will become brittle and just crumble," came his straightforward answer. She smiled inwardly, practical as always. "Oh, of course, dear. This is why my mother said I was a smart thing to marry you. You know just what to do." She watched as the corners of his mouth twitched into a slight smile. He pushed an empty cup towards her. "More tea, dear, please." "Of course, love." She stood up and busied herself with making the new pot of tea. "You didn't answer." He looked up from the paper. "Won't he be needing his face back?" Pouring him another cup, she then took up her place once more. "No, he won't. He's dead, dear." She smiled to him, her cheeks flushing with a blush. "Of course, I feel slightly foolish having asked. I don't suppose you really can live through having your face removed." "No, dear, you can't really. I had to kill him before I removed it." She poured herself a cup of tea. "Oh, well, that explains it then." She took a sip, then had a thought. "Where's the rest of him?" "In the freezer," he said simply. She watched him fold the paper up, then gazed back at him as he looked at her. "Now, dear, can we change the subject? this really isn't an appropriate conversation for the breakfast table. She looked down slightly ashamed. She hadn't meant to make it such an issue. She had just been intrigued. You're right, darling, of course. She took another sip of tea while she thought of something else. What would you like for dinner tonight? I thought we might have a joint. He smiled at her, his eyes twinkling knowingly, and she nodded. I'll sort it out today whilst you're at work, dear.
This piece was perfect for Cast Macabre. I just loved the dark humour of it. Comedy and horror have a long tradition. Just thinking of the split dog in Return of the Living Dead makes me laugh every time. Our second story is Give Me Your Nightmare by Tom Barlow, and it originally appeared in Sand magazine. Tom's other stories may be found in magazines including The Intergalactic Medicine Show, Tenemos, Redivider, The Appalachian Review and others, and he has anthologies including Desolate Places and The Book of Dead Things. Tom is a graduate of the Clarion Workshop. Give Me Your Nightmare by Tom Barlow. I climb into bed next to her, beneath sheet, duvet, handmade quilt still barely adequate in the January chill of the old farmhouse. Jenny's tense posture tells me she hasn't shared a bed with a man since her husband died 10 years ago. Roll onto your side away from me, I say, sliding across until I can spoon my body against hers. Arthritic joints pop as she tenses. The paunch I've developed with middle age presses against her lower back. I feel so stupid, she says. I'm sorry, but I need to put my arms around you. I work my right arm under her until I can enfold her in a hug. This is the only way it works. Forgive me, Benny, she says to her dead husband. I know I won't sleep a wink. You leave that to me, I say. Between the two of us, the bed is warming quickly. Did you pick a dream seed like I asked? My cousins Cheryl and Teresa. They died when we were in high school. I'd like to see them again. She smells nice for an old lady, lavender. Follow that dream seed, Jenny. You're safe in my arms. In a few minutes, the tension seeps out of her body as she relaxes into my embrace. Soon, her breathing softens too. I close my eyes, bracing myself for immersion. As Jenny floats away on her dream seed, I follow the trail that had been destroying her nights. She described to me the usual cast of her nightmares, background I need. Old people always have a huge cast of lost loved ones and a lifetime of knowledge about how many ways a life can go wrong. I recognised Benny first downtown decades ago. He is lifting a baby carriage onto a streetcar as the revolving door of Christie's expels me. Our eyes meet ever smitten. He pulls the carriage back out of the car as it lurches into motion, oblivious of the streetcar counterbound. The bumper tears the carriage from his hands. Trapped beneath the steel wheel, the cart stretches, spits an infant onto the track. The sound of grinding meat, squeals that could be metal, breaking metal, or worse. Friends, childhood, family all crowd me, each poignant with accusation. Why didn't I save him? The street is a pond, skaters, a loud crack, a ball of cashmere rolling on the ice, one tiny fist raised to me. I tear furiously at a maple branch which will not come free of the tree, stiff as strapped steel, and again the friends, family, harping as he floats towards the falls, still the limb holds fast. With a gentle nudge, my hand on the baby's back propelling the swing, his head laid back to giggle at my upside-down face when, from a blue sky, lightning strikes and latches onto him like a stubborn snake, ozone and burned roast. I reach impotently towards his blackening, and in every crowd, the doctor's face. Through the night, scene followed scene, with a common thread of condemnation, my delusion that the unborn will wait for a more convenient time. Once spurned, they never return. Jenny sleeps on peaceful in my arms while I finish her nightly tour of hell. To my relief, she is an early riser. The nightmare curtain drops as the sun yellows shears on the eastern-facing window. She wakens when I roll onto my back, exhausted. I can see her in a mirror on the dresser, a grin pulling 20 years from her face. "You are a miracle worker," she says. Tears are forming. "When I was a girl, that's what I thought heaven would be like. Friends and family all around with nothing to fear, not even death. When can you sleep with me again?" I compare her dreams with those of my other clients. Sadly, hers are the least painful. "Tomorrow night, same price." She rolls onto her other hip, bringing our heads together like girls sharing secrets on a sleepover. "But you can take those dreams every night. Don't they rip you apart after a while?" I tell my usual lie. "I don't know those people, so the dreams don't have the impact for me they would for you." Horseshit, of course. Taking on the images but not the heartache, what I wouldn't give for that gift. And, of course, I don't explain to her that anyone else's dreams are better than my own. I've kept my own nightmares at bay for years by stealing those of others. Now I'm terrified by the thought of how large they've grown, waiting patiently for the night that I finally sleep alone. There are ways with dealing with mental anguish, pain and guilt, the kind of low-lying lack of mental well-being that we may only become aware of in our nightmares. This story uses a supernatural gift to show a way of escaping from such pain, but it's a quick fix, not a long-term solution, and ultimately only makes the problem worse for everyone involved. The only thing to do with such problems is face them head-on and make your peace with them. If ignored or dulled by drink or drugs, or by strange middle-aged men spooning you in the night and sucking out your nightmares, who's to say how big those nightmares might become? How many times in your life have you received a gift that turned out to be a curse? I was so taken with this story that I decided to use it as a main feature, even though it's only a flash fiction piece. This is why Tom earned the £5 payment for it, though we aren't usually able to pay for flash, including Talu's great piece this week. I hope you think Tom's story was worth it. We'd like to be able to pay for all our flash pieces, and increase our payments to writers and narrators. If you can spare a donation or think of anyone who might like this podcast, please do anything you can to help or spread the word. More information can be found at castmacabre.org. Some of the music for this episode comes from the folks at Music Alley. Find them at musicalley.com and follow links to this week's tracks in our show notes. Cast Macabre is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Music by Painfax.